Hello, everyone. Welcome to Executive Report. Today, we're joined by Eric DaCosta with the Baltimore Ravens. Before we get started into the interview, let me read a little bit about his bio because he has an amazing story. So, Eric DaCosta is the Executive Vice President and General Manager of the Baltimore Ravens. His loyalty, love, and pride for the organization is unmatched. As a pillar of the organization's foundation, Eric has been with the franchise since day one, first beginning as an intern during the 1996 season and then ascending to the personnel department's chief decision maker in 2019. Prior to being named Executive Vice President and General Manager, Eric received general management offers and interviews from multiple teams each year. However, he never seriously considered leaving Baltimore. And the rest, as they say, is history. So, Eric, welcome to Executive Report.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I find really interesting is that pretty much universally, the Ravens are considered one of the finest, if not the best, organization in football. And it seems like even in the best organizations, and especially in the NFL, personnel tends to jump from team to team to get to that next rung on the ladder and excel their career. But you didn't do that. I mean, you had offers. You could have went to a lot of different places and to some really good teams, but you decided to stay here. So, I mean, what is it about the culture here in Baltimore that made you want to do that?
Well, you know, I think it started with Mr. Modell and then sort of segued to Steve Bisciotti. And just, you know, this is a great place to work. The organization takes care of its employees. I've felt a sense of pride that, you know, being a part of the club since day one, seeing the brand grow, seeing the achievement of the team, but on the field, in the community, there's just definitely a sense of pride that I felt. It's a tough place to leave. And then I would say, like, Steve Bisciotti, 2007, I think, asked me to be his general manager someday. And I think Steve, coming from more of a corporate background with Aerotech, Allegis, succession planning, something very important. And I committed to that, you know, I was honored, overjoyed, even though I never really knew exactly when it was going to take and how long it was going to take. So, I gave him my word. He gave me his word. I took the next 12 years, which was a long time, to learn, to hone my craft, to be better, to, observe Ozzie Newsome, who I consider to be the best general manager in sports, to make sure that when I got the chance, I wouldn't screw it up.
Got it. You mentioned Mr. Modell and then to Steve Bisciotti. And in business, oftentimes, you know, leadership changes. And sometimes that culture doesn't continue the way it was intended from the very beginning. How do you think those guys were able to continue that winning culture through various leadership changes?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the thing that I keep coming back to is continuity. And as we look at great organizations, whether it's in business or in sports, the one thing that we see is not a lot of change at the top. So we've had two owners here in Baltimore. We've had three head coaches. We've had two general managers over 26 years.
That's right.
Fairly remarkable, I think, when you look at the landscape and how we've done it. And I think what Steve did coming in was he observed Mr. Modell. He came in as a minority owner. He had the chance to observe, just like I had the chance as an assistant GM. And he didn't change much. He didn't tweak much at first. He listened to people. He observed. He asked good questions. He learned the business. He didn't blow it up. He didn't hire new people. He kept most of the people that were here. I think that's critically important in general. And as you look at, you know, organizations in sports that we admire, we saw that same thing. And what we see when we look at dysfunctional organizations quite often is we see organizations that keep rebooting, keep rebranding, restarting, firing people, hiring people, firing people, hiring people. And there's never any sense of culture. There's never any sense of continuity, of a passion, of a shared experience. And we're not that way. And so I give Steve Bisciotti a lot of credit for coming in and just continuing what we were doing, making tweaks along the way, but not wholesale major changes unless those changes were needed.
Got it. And do you guys still have that philosophy today? Are you actively teaching how to create that continuity?
I think we are. I think patience is a big thing. Listening is a big thing. And then developing your talent that you have on staff. So one of the things that we do in scouting, we're not a big club that goes out and hires people from other teams. Typically, what we try to do is find younger people, hungry people who are willing to learn, who are curious, irreverent, bring them in, teach them the business of scouting, develop them to take on bigger and bigger roles. When we do that, we find two things. Number one, they learn our way of doing things. And two, they have a sense of appreciation for the culture here. They develop a sense of ownership and pride in their craft. And it makes the transition very much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. So you had mentioned that in 2007, you know, that's when the idea of becoming a general manager someday really became evident. And I know in a lot of organizations that oftentimes the leadership will identify top talent early on. And they may not tell that top talent, sure, but they identify them. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, we're going to try and see if we can set this person on a path. Do you think that happened for you before 2007?
I do. I think I was fortunate. Again, coming to the Ravens when I did early 1996, we were a very small organization by design. We left a lot of people in Cleveland, and we were very streamlined. And I came into a situation here where reporting primarily to Ozzie Newsome, but also working in other departments and taking on roles in other departments, whether that was equipment, PR, training room, security, just as the gopher, basically. Mm-hmm. So the lowest of the low on the totem pole was me. And it gave me a great chance to appreciate what everybody else did. That being said, at one point in early 1996, the season, I was 25 years old, I think, and Ozzie Newsome called me in, and he wanted to show me something in a game. And as I was walking out, he said, "Hey, Eric, you're going to be the GM of this team someday." And I was like the newest hire. I had no NFL experience. And it just shocked me. And it was like one of those moments where you walk out, and honestly, like my office, there was no office. I had a card table in the hallway.
Really?
And I walked out, I sat down at the card table, and I just gave myself a fist pump. And I was like, oh my God, Ozzie Newsome just told me that I'd be the general manager of this club someday. Fast forward 24 years later, and I was given a chance. And so I did feel that way. I felt that I was respected. My mindset was always make people think that there were five Eric DaCostas, so that I would be running around so much and accomplishing so much work that people would think to themselves, how the hell is he doing that?
Got it. So that rumor of working 20 hours a day isn't really a rumor. That actually happened.
Well, I tried to be strategic with it. I mean, I honestly think that if you're working 20 hours a day, you're probably not using your time wisely. So what I tried to do is really figure out, number one, what's most important that day? What do I have to get accomplished? And then how do I do it to the best of my abilities as quickly as possible? And so for me, time management was incredibly important. At that point in my career, I was single. I didn't have a family, no children. So my career was the number one obsession in my life. And it was a passion. It still is. I tell this to people. When you come into that gate out there, that security shack, I still get excited, as excited every single day as I did in 1998. And that's what motivates me, the quest for championships, the passion for the challenge, working with these people, being invested in this idea that we can be the best team in the league, and then making it happen.
Yeah, and I think that word passion is critical. Regardless of what industry and what you're doing, having a desire to want to do what you're doing is extremely important. And I think Ozzie really did that as well. Mm-hmm. So obviously you spent a lot of years with Ozzie. I mean, he had to have been a great mentor and a teacher. What was it like working for him?
Yeah, you know, I could write a book on Ozzie Newsome, and he and I have spent probably more time together than with anyone else other than maybe our spouses. And most of my great memories in the NFL revolve around Ozzie or a time with Ozzie or a moment that we might have shared together in different ways. And what I can tell you about Ozzie is that he and I are totally different. He grew up in the Deep South. I grew up in New England. He's African American, Hall of Fame athlete. I'm a white guy, Division III athlete. We're just so different. And yet, we clicked from the very first day and became, in a lot of ways, best friends. I've learned from him. I think he's probably learned from me in some ways. Ozzy told me one time, not really that long ago, he said, my weaknesses are your strengths and some of your weaknesses are my strengths. And I really believe that. I've learned so much from him, watching him, his patience that he shows every single day, his incredible humility. Anyone who knows Ozzie Newsome, who really knows Ozzie Newsome, comes away and says he's one of the most humble guys that you could ever meet. And there's a beauty in that, I think, for me. And when I get restless or when I get impatient, which happens a lot, or when I get angry, I think about Ozzie because he doesn't get angry, at least on the outside.
Yeah,
he doesn't get impatient. And then we speak the same language, the football, the culture, building it the right way. He's a big believer in the process, and I say process in quotations, and I'm a big believer in the process as well. And whenever we are undecided about what to do, or how to do it, or what our strategy might be, we come back to those ideas like, what did we do in 2000? What did we do in 2008? What worked for us in 2018 or 19 or whatever it might be? And there's a real feeling of conviction that these are the right things. These are the right things to do at the time. We believe in it, and it's been a joy working with him for the last 26 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ozzie is well known for finding great value in the draft, great talent and so forth. And you seem to have picked up right where he left off. And I'm really curious, especially for the business people out there right now, when you're interviewing potential players and you're looking at guys in the draft, you know, what kind of questions are you asking, and what is it that you're looking for in those responses?
Yeah, well, that's a trick question, because if I give you these answers, then
it's just between you and me, I promise.
Yes. No, I think what we try to do, so when we talk to players, we are trying to really ascertain a lot of different things. Does the player have a good heart? Is he honest? Is he a good teammate? Does he have a growth mindset? Does he have a pride in his craft? Does he learn from his mistakes? Has he overcome adversity? Is this the type of guy that you want in the locker room? Is this the type of guy that you think is going to continue to improve? What does this guy care about off the field? What's important to him? Is he involved in the community? Does he care about the community? Or is it all about himself? How's he going to fit with his teammates every single day? Those are the kind of things that we look for in different ways. And some of that information we can get from talking to other people. What we try to do when we interview a player is what we find a lot of times, and this could happen in big business as well, but a lot of times people are expecting the questions, or they've thought about the questions that they're going to be asked. So the second question or the third question is actually much more important than the first question. So for instance, we might say to a player, what was one thing going into this season that you felt you had to work on? And so maybe you ask a receiver that question, and he might say, well, I had some drops this year. I dropped some passes. And you say, okay, great. And he's looking at you, and he's pretty happy with his answer, because now he feels like he's giving you an answer that says, I've been able to admit that I needed to work on something. I've been able to, I'm self-aware, I told this general manager that I didn't catch the ball quite as well, right? So he's feeling good about his answer. So then I might say, okay, well, what was your process for improving your hands this year? Well, what did you do? Sometimes they don't answer that question quite as well. They might say, oh, you know, what you like to hear have them say is maybe I spent 30 minutes after practice every day working on the jugs machine. And I strengthened my hands. I retrained my eyes to finish the catch, you know, different things. Or maybe I went through every single game and cut out every single drop that I had and analyzed exactly why in every situation I might have dropped the ball. Those are the kind of secondary answers that you hope to get.
Yeah.
Sometimes you ask a follow-up question and you can tell that the guy really hasn't given any thought to what he said with the first question, that he's just telling you that because he knows he has to answer that question. So it's the process of, you know, what did you do to improve? Or why do you come to that conclusion? Or what have you done to improve that? I think that's sometimes really, really important. The other thing that I believe in personally is that players that have overcome adversity, that's a strength. I hate asking a player, give me an adversity that you've overcome, and they can't give you an answer. Because we've all had an adversity at some point that was challenging in our lives. Now, everybody's adversity might be different. There's a different scale maybe of adversities. But if a player's adversity was tearing an ACL that he was able to overcome, that's really no different than a player whose adversity might have been that his parents were both incarcerated when he was 3 years old and he was grew up with his grandmother raising him. I struggle when we ask a player what his adversities were and he can't tell you. It's either he's not self-aware enough to actually recognize an adversity, one, he's too guarded to communicate with you, two, or in some cases, maybe he's never really had an adversity, which we always think that it's a strength when the guy's overcome something because at this level, he's probably going to have some adversities. So he's going to get injured. He may not start right away. He's going to have some family issues. Players that have already overcome some of those issues in their lives, we think, acclimate quicker and more fast than players that have never had those things happen.
Interesting. I'm curious, since you've been head here in the personnel, are there any players that really just completely blew you away and you're like, wow, I can't believe this interview was that good?
Yeah, we've had some, I would say. Probably wouldn't want to mention a player specifically, but I think the players that really excel in the interviews are the players that are honest regardless. And so if they've had some issues off the field, they're willing to explain those issues in detail and explain why they might have happened. Hopefully they have some degree of remorse potentially. They're also the players that I think have an emotional intelligence about them, the way they carry themselves, their body language, their ability to communicate. And then I think too, the players that are able to discuss mentors, coaches, family, important figures in their lives who have helped them along the way. A lot of times when you have a story like that, that resonates with you. I'm a big believer in having mentors, taking coaching in various different ways, and thanking people who have helped you get to where you are. So what we find too, I think sometimes it doesn't really matter whether a guy played at Alabama or South Alabama. It's really the person. And so it doesn't really necessarily have anything to do with your experiences to that point as much as it is you as a person, your development as a person, emotional intelligence, situational intelligence, working with others, because this is the ultimate team sport. It doesn't really work. We're not tennis. It doesn't really work if you can't get along with a lot of different people every single day. That's a really important thing for us when we look at players and try to figure out, is this guy going to be a culture fit? The loners, the people that really don't acclimate quickly, they have a very tough time here in this environment.
Got it. Now, something I actually learned probably in the last year or so is that you were on the committee that interviewed and helped select John Harbaugh for the head coach position. And I remember when he was announced as being hired, and I remember the other names that were floating around. There are a lot of, you know, offensive and defensive geniuses, a lot of former players, some big names. And I thought, you know, what is it about, you know, this special teams coordinator from Philly that really set himself apart? I mean, do you remember back then? What was it that grabbed his attention or grabbed your attention?
I do. In fact, a lot of our meetings took place in this room, and I was very blessed at that time to be on that committee. I was still... Yeah, it was early 2008, and you know, I was still in some ways developing myself and really trying to be a professional, and to have that experience was incredible for me. The thing that separated John from a lot of the other candidates was his humility, his ability to emotionally attach himself to you. He had a spark and he had an enthusiasm. It seemed to me that John Harbaugh at that point thought of himself as the underdog. And that resonated with me because I've thought of myself as an underdog for most of my life. His plan, he was highly organized. I thought highly strategic. And I love the fact as a special teams coach that the special teams coach is in a unique position because he touches all the players on the team, the offensive players, the defensive players, the special teams players. So his ability to relate to the entire roster, I thought, was powerful. And then I knew a little bit about the Harbaugh family. Jack Harbaugh, I had been a scout at Western Kentucky when he was there. I had, way back when in the day, part of my responsibilities was picking players up at the airport. And when we signed Jim Harbaugh, I picked him up. I took him to the hospital. I spent a lot of time with Jim and his agent. And so I knew a little bit about the family. I knew that this was a tough-minded family, a gritty family that loved football, that understood the importance of a culture. And I felt where we were as an organization at that point, that John would have been a great fit. And fortunately, I think we were all correct in our assessment.
Yeah, I think you can say that's for sure. you know, I, my producer's telling me we're running short on time, so I've got just one last question. I've heard the word passion mentioned a couple of times in this conversation. And with passion, oftentimes comes emotion, which is acceptable and expected. Now, when someone like Hollywood Brown asks for a trade, like which just happened, that's got to hurt a little bit when you're trying to build something and you expect him to be part of it. So how do you deal with some of those negative emotions that you might be feeling and keeping your team positive and moving forward?
That's a great question. You know, and for me, I would say that when I look at myself, I've got a lot of weaknesses. And, you know, I think, as I said, I'm probably passionate sometimes to a fault, emotional. I do have a temper at points, but I'm also a problem solver. And so I'm able to look at a situation and say, you know what, we're not going to win the situation, but we can make it the best possible situation. So when a player like Hollywood Brown, who I'm emotionally attached to, my first draft pick as general manager, I've got his helmet in my office, actually, autographed. Very tough. What I always try to do is step back a little bit, at least for a couple of days, assess the situation, think about it, and then formulate a strategy. And what I told Hollywood and what I told Orlando Brown and what I told Hayden Hurst, all three of those guys, is listen, I understand where you're coming from. I hold you in very high regard personally. I appreciate what you've done for the club. Now, all that being said, if we do trade you, the club has to win. I am a very competitive person. I think my passion is tied to my competitiveness, whether it's football, playing shuffleboard, playing tennis, playing chess, whatever that might be. I always want to win. And so I was very clear with these guys, Marquise, the latest example, that the only way I would trade him is if I felt the value that we would get was sufficient. Not only sufficient, but in my mind, a win for the club. Because I work at, for Steve Bisciotti. I work for the Ravens. I don't work for the players. I work for Steve. And so everything that I do, what motivates me, what drives me, my mindset is the club has to win. And so sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes it takes 3 months, 4 months. Hollywood came to me in January and said he wanted to be traded. We had a few offers to do that. I didn't think the offers were strong enough. So I channeled my inner Ozzie Newsome. I was patient. And I let the deal come to me. And it was a deal where I felt, hey, we're getting enough. We're going to win. But yet I can also accommodate the player, help the player through these challenges that he's faced with, that he wants to play for somebody else. And both sides can win.
Excellent. Well, everyone, make sure you hit that like button and subscribe. And Eric, thank you for hosting us and thank you for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you.